You're listening to the ISOCA podcast. I'm your host, Abby Norton. On today's episode of the podcast, I'm speaking with cybersecurity experts Dustin Brewer and Frank Downs. In this episode of the podcast, we're going to be talking about security in the supply chain. So to kick us off, can you tell me why we're talking about the supply chain today?
Dustin and I were discussing the other day, there's a lot of considerations when it comes to cybersecurity that are not traditional. When people think about cybersecurity, they think about, oh yeah, ones and zeros and packets and hacks and what's the encryption and so forth, which, by the way, still think about that.
Yeah, don't get us wrong. Do not stop thinking about that. Or if you haven't thought about it, you should start thinking about it.
But yeah, we're not saying don't think of those. But hey, guess what? You always have more to think about in this field. And something that kind of jumped out at us was there is supply chain security considerations that really are non-traditional, in that what we're seeing with supply chains around the world right now are serious security problems, but are from a direction we never really planned, right? And specifically, a really good example of this is what we're seeing in the chip shortage right now, which a lot of people would say, well, a chip shortage, that's not cybersecurity. That's not cybersecurity at all. That's supply chain. To which I would say, well, we live in a world where you have to vet all your third-party vendors.
Yep.
For security. Literally, we have CMMC, the Cybersecurity Maturity Model Certification, coming up for that purpose, right? Controlling sensitive information with third parties and other organizations, and how that supply chain is secured and how that supply chain, even the speed at which that supply chain functions, can threaten the business. And it's really interesting right now because what we have here is not your traditional chip shortage, but a chip reallocation to an extent. So if anyone's been following the news lately, there's been a huge, you probably noticed it's a little hard to buy certain things, such as graphics cards, such as certain computer components, such as chipsets. And the organizations, the businesses that are seeing the pinch the hardest, one of the areas of industry that are seeing the pinch the hardest is the auto industry. Which is always really fun because everyone thinks of cars. They don't always first think of chips and electronics, which makes sense because cars' main purpose is from point A to point B, right? But as we progress, and I remember when I bought my first car, and this was way back in the early 2000s, right? Wow. On the sales, as I was signing the contract for the car and everything, the guy who was selling them, the contract guy, had on his desk a clear box just full of computer chips. And I'm like, what's that? He goes, oh, I always like to show this to people. This is the amount of electronics that's going into your car.
Wait, how big was the box? Like, give me
This was maybe, I'd say, a foot by foot. And
okay.
It was just a bunch of different boards and components and all that stuff. You know, that old monitoring stuff for things like tires and et cetera. But he's like, when I started this, maybe we would fill a quarter of that box with electric components. He goes, it's getting more and more every year. And that's kind of what's happening with cars now. That was back then. Now cars, I mean, some cars are just big computers, right? Like, I think you could make a strong argument that a Tesla is a computer that has wheels, right? So the chip shortage is hitting the auto industry a lot more harshly, because when the pandemic started, all the car industry said, oh, well, we're flexible. We do just-in-time production. And we need to cancel all our chip orders and all our component orders. And it wasn't just chips, to meet the drop in demand that's going to be coming. So they canceled all these orders. And then what happened was all the chip contracts were bought out by all the companies that were making things like computers, cell phones, tablets, which saw a huge surge. In fact, I was looking up after our discussion, Dustin, I did a little bit of a research and saw that year over year, there was an 11% increase purchase surge for computers year over year. It's the highest in a decade, when traditionally in the last several years, there's even been declines of purchase of laptops and computers year over year. Now they're surging. And what happened was all these contracts for all these chips were bought out by these manufacturers for these other entertainment devices. So people are staying home. They can't go anywhere. And they're working from home, too. So they have to buy more kit.
Right.
More perfect storm came when all of a sudden crypto started spiking. And everyone tried to buy chips for those. And then you have the Xbox came out and the PlayStation 5. You have the traditional, you have the auto industry in this instance, unable to get any chips because not only did they leave their contracts, did they get out of those contracts, they can't get on any new increased contracts for like a year because all the contracts have been purchased for by the chip makers.
Holy God.
Yeah, and they can't just, you know, cut ahead in the line. So you have this kind of, as a result, there's a lot of security concerns that kind of connect to this, which I know sounds like a, you know, madman talking here, but if we can't, if you can't buy, if your company can't get the gear that it needs, and all of a sudden something breaks, something's not working, something, all these transistors that keep a lot of high-end systems running in manufacturing, I mean, OT in and of itself, you have, Dustin and I were talking about it the other day. If something breaks at our house, if there's a few chips here that break, we only have one of them.
Yeah.
Not one of them. I mean, if my graphics card goes, I'm done. I'm done. It's going to be a whole.
You're not going to shell out $2,000 for a 3070?
Yeah, I'm all right. I'm okay. And you also.
Play Age of Empires.
Yeah, right. But that's it. And so if this happens at a company, all types of companies have this potential supply chain vulnerability, right? Where it's not going to be something that, like, if you can't buy, I need product X in order to make product Y, it's just not going to happen. And it's a security concern and a business operations concern, especially when these things are tied to security. A lot of security, cybersecurity and physical security now rely on chips, right? It is a huge issue that you're not going to be, you could go out of dust. And I think some, at least suppliers for other parts to these car manufacturing or companies may go out of business because they're just not able to sell their stuff because cars can't get built on time.
Yeah. So, and I think the word is out. Computers aren't a fad. The internet's not a fad. This thing's probably sticking around for a little bit, right, everybody? I think everybody can agree on that now. And I know that we laugh about it and I'm making a joke about it, but I got to be honest, it wasn't that long ago that people thought that. People were like, oh, you know, computers, business is still going to be done on paper. Computers are, you know, this email thing, I don't know about it. And I kind of remember, it's funny you mentioned automotive because it made me think back to my childhood where guys used to work on their cars all the time. And I remember there was a point when, you know, we were at a mechanic's and my dad was talking to the mechanic and the mechanic was like, oh yeah, these things have so many chips in them nowadays. You know, you can't, it's like a computer. You can't just fix your car anymore. It's basically just a big computer driving. And this would have been like, you know, 80s, you know, late 80s, early 90s that I was hearing this. And so, yeah, again, the word's out. I think, you know, manufacturers are starting to find all kinds of new uses for these tiny devices, sometimes the bigger devices, right? So I own a Tesla and I'm not trying to be like, oh, I own a Tesla. I don't own the big Tesla. I don't own the expensive
Tesla. Tesla, though.
I own the cheap Tesla, okay? But it is basically a computer on wheels. That's what it is. It's an amazing monument to, first of all, electric vehicles, but also just, you know, the computing alone that goes into some of the really cool new features that they have, like the AI that's built into Tesla. If you want to have the automatic driving, if you trust it that much, I don't yet. I honestly still kind of don't trust the AI enough to drive me around. That scares me a little bit. But those take chips. Those take they take semiconductors, right? Everything we're using right now, this microphone is basically a mini computer that, yeah, it is, you know, converting my voice into digital signals and sending it to the computer. But within it, it actually has chips and semiconductors with inside of that. So everything that's in front of me right now has a semiconductor of some kind inside of it. And if you think about it that way, even you listening to this podcast, whether you're in your car, wherever you're at, whatever is providing the signal is backed by many, many semiconductors, right? And we're talking, I think Apple uses Foxconn, there's Qualcomm. You know, when you get down to the real suppliers of the supply chain stuff, you know, that's kind of who we're talking about. And like Frank mentioned, the automotive industry has been hit pretty hard by this. And there's a lot of different reasons why, you know, not in the least bit, you know, thanks to the world we're all living in right now, thanks to the pandemic, right? We're all at home. We don't have the resources at home. Some of us didn't have the resources at home we had at the office. So we had to go out and buy new equipment. Or maybe we thought, you know what, it's a good time to upgrade because we haven't upgraded that family PC in 10 years. so you bought the new desktop.
Well, and upgrade from Vista, I think.
Yeah, upgrade from Vista. That's right. We all had Windows XP at home, so we had to, you know, finally put Windows 10 on here. So there's been a lot of things that have gone into this. Another thing is like you mentioned, Frank, like we have this surge that happens every year, but the surge was just so great this time. Everybody was just not really ready for it. And then the investors are kind of like, wait, what's going on? Like, who do we invest in now? And so there's all these things that are kind of breaking down the supply chain, like you mentioned. And, you know, it's funny because now we have a digital supply chain that we all figured out during the SolarWinds attack. It turns out the supply chain isn't just physical anymore. It's digital as well. Right, folks? So, and Frank kind of did a good job of tying this back into cybersecurity. So what does that mean for us? Well, if that security appliance goes out, I hope there's another one that's like available somewhere. Right. I hope it's not, oh, well, we can get you one by August because that's going to be a problem. Right.
This episode of the Isaka podcast is brought to you by ESET. ESET has been on the forefront of cybersecurity for over 30 years, helping businesses and people in more than 200 countries enjoy safer technology. The experts at ESET know that even with the latest cybersecurity technology, without proper training, your staff could be the biggest threat to your organization's security. You can reduce your risk of successful cyber attacks by training your employees on a regular basis. ESET makes cybersecurity training easy. Here are the top four things ESET says you should know to become a cybersecurity MVP. Number one, with password security questions, fake answers offer real security. Number two, phishing scams only work if you're not paying attention. Number three, two-factor authentication is the number one way to keep sensitive accounts safe. Number four, public Wi-Fi is just that, public. For more expert advice and cybersecurity training tips, check out ESET online at business.eset.com/isaka. Right now, you can get access to free training at business.eset.com/isaka.
I was actually reading up on AI being utilized within cybersecurity, and I can't remember the name of the guy who was quoted as saying this, but he basically said, if you're not using AI in cybersecurity to some extent, then you're probably selling stagecoaches, which I love. Of course, that means if you're not utilizing AI in cybersecurity, you're really, really, really behind the times. Of course, again, the AI that takes processing power. Some manufacturers, such as Apple, actually have a dedicated AI chip that processes its artificial intelligence and helps its artificial intelligence run. So, and again, it depends on what vendor you're using or what software you're using to enable that AI. But either way, on the back end, you know, Frank, I know that one of your favorite quotes is, you know, every time we connect a device, the internet gets a little bit bigger, right? And that's true, but also that's another chip down the drain, not down the drain, but that's another chip in use.
Put chips down drains now, and they have a function. They have those smart faucets. So I'm just saying.
Okay. So I was right to an extent. Yeah, but no, the IoT devices, right? So we have everything. Like, I'm surprised the water bottle I'm drinking out of doesn't have like some kind of chipset in it right now that like lets me know that my water bottle's empty. Like, that's the level we're at now with all this technology. So there's
a quick plug. There is a smart cup. I think it might still be on Kickstarter, but they had a smart cup.
And what exactly would it tell you?
I think it did like the temperature, and if you press the button, it might try to like heat it up or cool it or something. But it had like app integration, if I remember correctly. I'm like, I don't need an app for my cup. I'm okay. I've talked to you about my Kickstarter adventures, and you've had some as well. You're still waiting for those smart glasses. So.
Oh yeah. Don't get me started. Don't get me started. But hey, but they have chip. You know what? Maybe that's delayed because of the chip shortage. Who knows? But that brings up a really good point: is prioritization, right? Like, what do we really need to use these chips for? It's debatable about cryptocurrency. Of course, I would say absolutely yes, but there are people out there who'd be like, oh, you know what? Those can actually be used for other things, more important things. And I'm sure that's very true. You know, I'm sure there's gamers out there cursing at me right now saying, cryptocurrency, no, you got to use it for gaming. We know. But some of these chips are actually going to what they need to go to. And I think that's kind of what's been keeping us afloat. And hopefully when the pandemic, you know, hopefully it's winding down. There are mixed reports on that right now, but everybody's, you know, starting to get their vaccine, at least their first shot in the States. And hopefully the pandemic's winding down and we'll see what happens with this boom. But this is going to cause some issues down the road.
What's interesting is, as you're talking about, you know, the parts, we always talk about SCADA, old SCADA systems having difficulty. Yeah. replacing parts. And if all of a sudden that, you don't want that to become commonplace everywhere, right? It's a really great documentary over the weekend called The Last Blockbuster. It's on Netflix, and it was about, literally, there's one Blockbuster video left in the U.S. in Bend, Oregon, and it is just hustling along. The big problem is there are literally no other Blockbusters. So whenever they have a computer, their inventory system, it's getting no updates. Nothing. There's no update, like, not since, like, the early 2000s. So their computers that scan in and out, all the DVDs and so forth, whenever a part breaks, literally the manager goes back and they just have a room of a bunch of old boxes that they were able to buy from Dish Network from the last ones that closed, the Alaska one, so that when something breaks down, they literally just harvest parts out of these other systems that they only have. Like, I didn't see a lot of systems back there, Dustin, in that back room, like maybe four or five. And then they would literally blow like years of dust off of it and then take it up to the front and try and connect it. I really hope we don't get to that point. I hope this supply chain situation gets fixed by then. But it's an example of, you know, things can get worse. Oh, man, I hate saying that.
Yeah, oh,
the pandemic's almost over. Things can get worse, you know.
That's like, have you seen Snowpiercer?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that.
Yeah.
I guess
so. I'm not going to ruin the ending for you folks listening at home who haven't seen it yet, but they have a different option for replacing parts of the brake.
Yeah. Oh, man.
But hopefully we don't get to that point. For those of you who have seen the movie Snowpiercer, I think you know what I'm talking about. But I do get made fun of a lot. So you know this about me, Frank. I like hoard my old laptops. I have my laptops from that I had like before I went to boot camp, which is like a really, really long time ago.
Oh, what last count was like 13 or 14?
That's right. And I just counted. I think I have 13 laptops sitting here. And don't get me wrong, I don't buy a laptop every year. Maybe just about there for a little bit, but not usually.
Yeah, our old place of work would give them to us as well.
That would happen. That's right. Yeah, we would go on trainings and that's right. You would get a free laptop with your training. So it was a netbook, so it wasn't like a great laptop. But, you know, I did have something that went bad on one of my laptops, and I was literally able to cobble together, you know, everything from taking apart some pieces of my other laptop. And it's funny because I do have like an Atari 2600 laying around. I have a couple of original Nintendo Entertainment Systems laying around as well. So if one piece breaks, I have like a secondary that I can quickly throw, you know, one piece into the other. And that's like, it's funny because I'm kind of a minimalist in the rest of my life when it comes to things I own. But when it comes to electronics, forget it. I have like every cell phone I've ever owned. I have every cell phone my wife ever owned since I've known her. I have like people just like, hey, do you want this cell phone? I'm like, yes, I do. Thank you very much. I have some original Motorola Razors, which I think are, you know, that they're fantastic. I don't know what it is. I love collecting tech. But see, that's right. It seems funny. And it seems like something that, you know, you like, hey, just throw that away, or hey, donate it, or, you know, sell it or whatever. And by all means, please donate. But also in times like this, it's not that bad of an idea. All of a sudden, you know, in hindsight, you know, it's like, oh, OK, you know what? That was a great idea. Thanks for doing that.
So, yes, the supply chain is something that is a security concern that not everyone always ever thinks of. And Earth is currently really getting a hard look at it. To tie up on, especially on the chip angle for this, what's really been interesting. Well, I mean, it's all really been interesting, but a unique note here. It's not just the companies now that are with the contracts and everything that are causing part of the issue. Over 80% of chips in the world are made in Asia. And one of the issues that's currently happening is China is now doing a chip hoarding effort where they're trying to hoard more chips. This is not unfamiliar territory, because if you take a look at it was the 2008 Olympics, there was a big surge in oil prices. That was not the sole reason for, but one of the contributing elements was, in order to prepare for the Olympics, China bought a lot of oil. And it was one of the contributing factors for prices to go up. So you have literally the perfect storm, right, of pandemic, contracts, crypto, PlayStation, and China that made this very supply chain constriction.
Which, by the way, 10 years ago, if you would have said those chain of words to anybody, they would have thought you were insane or there was something wrong. But again, like, so we all have our head in the clouds, right? And figuratively and actually, right? We have all these great technologies that are coming out and that we're all paying attention to and that are making our lives easier. We have these new programming languages that we literally can just say, hey, computer, I want a program to do this. And the computer will make the code for you and actually produce the machine language code. So we tend to forget that at the very basics, the very fundamental level of computing, we're really talking about electrons flying through a semiconductor. And it's wild to think about it like that. But that is how everything works. At the very bottom of everything, it's still the same chipset that we used in the 1970s. We're still using the x86 processor chipset. Apple's working on coming out with a new one. Of course, now we have the RISC processors that are in most of our mobile equipment. So in most of our cell phones, we're using RISC ARM processors that I think are on version, 15 or something now, which is amazing. But, you know, when we talk about our servers, when we talk about our laptops, you know, as long as you're not using a Chrome book for the most part, we're talking about these really old architecture. They've made advancements to them, of course. They've gotten faster, they've gotten slicker, they've gotten thinner, but you know, it's always important to remember, because those are the things that usually get forgotten and then get exploited. And we see that with, you know, buffer overflow attacks all the time. We get these buffer overflow attacks that attack x86 processors, and it's like, wait, how'd that happen? It's because we keep forgetting that they're there. We keep forgetting that, you know, above the Kubernetes, above the software-defined networks, there are normal traditional physical defined networks. There are these signals that are flying back and forth, perpetuated by either, you know, electrons or a magnetic or some kind of medium, you know, via copper wire or air. And I think I'm not trying to get too like frou-frou on everybody here, but like, it's important to kind of bring it back all into perspective and remember that what we're really trying to defend here are these semiconductors that are trying to do their job. And then the software, of course, that enables them.
Thank you, Dustin. And thanks, Frank. That's all the time we have on this episode of the Isaka podcast. But to make sure you never miss an episode of CyberPros Exchange, be sure to subscribe to the Isaka podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.